She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and thanks for joining us. A brief shout-out to one of our major sponsors and supporters of this show and this podcast series and Mrs. Green's World in its entirety, the Chapman Automotive Group. And I sincerely thank them, our team thanks them for their support and for all they do to make our community and our planet stronger and more sustainable, and for the major contribution made by their community and green team. They are indeed doing their share, showing they care in very meaningful and impactful ways for the greater good. Thank you, Chapman Automotive Group. The name of our show today is Shaping a New World. And the truth is that our guest is someone who has dedicated most of her life to doing exactly that, shaping a world that she wants to live in, that she wants other people to live in, that is socially just, that is sustainable, that is financially sound. And I am honestly thrilled to have as our guest today Barbara Mowat. She is the president of Impact Communications and Grow Your Biz founder, which we are going to talk about a great deal. And we're going to learn quite a bit about more about her and about her important work and about her international impact. And Barbara, I want you to say hello, and then I want to wax poetic for a few minutes about the work you've done to kind of set the stage for our listeners. So thanks for being here.
Thank you, Gina, for having me. It is truly an honor to be on a guest in your very wonderful podcast show.
And we're going to have some fun. It's like, I know that. I've met you, and I know that you are committed to having fun as well as doing all the important work. And I said to you off air, I really want to tell our listeners and share with them your story, because you never know who's listening to this podcast and who might be inspired to go out and make his or her difference in the world. So just bear with me while I praise you, okay? We have to learn to accept that when you do things like you do. So Barbara is a trade and international business development specialist who has helped tens of thousands of businesses over the past 30 years. She is sought after by private companies, organizations, and governments around the world for her expertise and her passionate support of fostering entrepreneurship, business development and growth, and creating win-wins through her extensive global network. She is the founder and president of Grow Your Biz Limited and Impact Communications, a multifaceted consulting company that features management training and consulting, an international product, business and market development in global marketplace. She created the well-respected Uniquely programs that have assisted over, are you ready for this, everybody? 12,000 entrepreneurs and given access to increased markets, and created and owned a national magazine, a retail store, and an e-commerce site supporting small businesses. She is an international leader in the development of SME enterprises, which I'm going to ask her about, whose work has assisted entrepreneurs and facilitated trade throughout Canada, Southeast Asia, the United States, South America, Europe, Afghanistan, India, and Africa. So such a diverse and truly global background and perspective. And if I went into her board and committee work, it would take up more than half the show. And I want you to get to know Barbara and not hear all of it from me. So Barbara, thank you for sitting there for that.
Yes, it's rather embarrassing when you start listing all the things because it has been a lifetime, but it's always difficult to hear.
I know it makes women, I think most women, feel uncomfortable, and I don't know exactly if men do too, but it's something that I think it would be great to change. And I'm trying. When I get praise, I try to stand up and say thank you, even though I'm choking. It's like, no, let's get on with the important business, not about this. So let's get on about the important business. You started on a very important journey of helping women entrepreneurs oh so long ago, and almost like yesterday. That's how life seems to be these days. So talk to me about and share with our listeners What was your vision when you started it? How did you get on this amazing journey of helping women grow and succeed in countries all over the world?
Thank you, Gina. You know, I do want to go back to the 80s. I'm in a community in British Columbia, and if anybody knows BC, if you're not living in a major center, you're in a tiny town that might only have a population of 300 or 400 or 1,000.
Right.
And in the 80s, as in many other places in the States and and in Canada for sure, we were going through an economic downturn where our major industries had collapsed. Forestry, mining, fishing, etc. And so gone were the days where a large company was going to come in and rescue a small town and give 200 jobs, right. Which again is what we're facing today. So I had been an educator for 15 years. I was a teacher because I was raising I was raising three kids, and teaching was a great vocation at
yes,
the time.
Yes.
And so I taught everything from elementary, high school, college, and even graduate studies at University of British Columbia. But I realized after 15 years of teaching, I was a closet entrepreneur. And so at a very...
I love that, a closet entrepreneur. Oh, I might have to make hashtag out of that for Twitter.
It was true. And I realized as I was going through teaching people in the college level about career and lifestyle planning that I was going through the same transition, but I was quitting at a very horrible time. It was economic downturn, and it was like, oh my God, what did I just do?
There goes the family budget.
Oh my gosh. And so one of the things that was happening at that time was the resurgence of home-based businesses, because as I traveled throughout British Columbia, I realized that people were needing to bring income to their families. And it was very, and this ties into the U.S. because there were two wonderful women. One was Barbara Brabeck in Naperville, Illinois, who had a little newsletter called the Home Business Network. And what was interesting for me, and then another woman in Dallas, Texas, who had started teleworking. And I went, we're not doing this in Canada. It turned out that the then BC government, and I don't even know I'm so nonpartisan there,
right.
Is they wanted to know how can we create economic growth for families, and I realized that most of those families were started by women who were creating different gifts, different specialty food items, and so that was the beginning. That was in the 80s, and what was interesting is that I put forth a proposal to the then BC government to say, this is what we need to do. We need to take a look at small micro entrepreneurs. We have to take a look at giving them a hands up, not a hands out.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And so that was the beginning of my passion for working with small business. And I also grew up in a small town in Northern Ontario, population 5,000. If anybody knows Shania Twain, she came from a place that was a little bit further north than me. But it was like, these were towns that were suffering. And so what I put together was a model that became actually world famous. I presented the model to World Trades, WTO in Geneva and various places in the world. And what it was to help people, micro-entrepreneurs, assist them to develop their product. So it was about product development, business development, and trade development. And we started small. We started in BC. Along with that, we started changing the infrastructure that would allow home-based businesses to grow slowly out of their homes to that eventually they will become part of the bricks and mortars in a small community. And then we did trade shows, and then we did the uniquely website well before any of this was, it wasn't a fad, it wasn't a trend, it was reality. So my passion grew, and that was my vision. My vision was always, how can we have impact, excuse the pun, how can we have direct impact on the economic growth and empowerment of millions around the world, helping them, enabling them, developing them, with their products, with their ideas, with their inventions, so that they would grow from micro to small to medium to large. And that was in the 80s. It never stopped. No, that was it. That was my passion.
And I want to ask you, I want to just like bring it down a little bit. When you talked about three big categories, product development, business development, and trade development. And is that like, walk us through the thread of the barriers. Because I'm just going to give my little two cents here. What I see with a lot of some business industry, business owners or cottage industry, they have an ideal vision, a passion, and they're really good at what they do. And then the business end of it is where things fall down. Is that what you were seeing? Is they didn't know how to do anything else. They knew how to make a great product. And so was that what excited you, that you could help give them tools to get them to the next level?
In fact, it even started at the product development. And this is, you know, anyone who travels in the world, and I don't mean to put anyone down, but we'll often see that many of us who travel will buy something, but it's a sentimental buy. But does it really have the global value that somebody will want to buy all the time? So that was happening in any country. So what I was seeing is that we needed to have what would the merchandise want from a product? What would make them put their hand in their pocket?
It was everything.
First of all, with the product, we had to take a look at design of the product. We had to take a look at what materials are they using? How can we improve it? How can we, you know, IKEA is a good example. One of my merchandise specialists was a judge from a senior vice president from IKEA, and he would look at a wood product and he would say, I can make two products out of this one piece. Out of wood, and they're only making one product. So the utilization of materials. So it started at that end. And then it was about the scalability. So it wasn't just about going to a little fair, a craft show, or selling it to your neighbors. It was about what's my capacity to really make this come from a instant gratification, a quick check, to actually long-term sustainability. How do I get into a larger market? How do I make sure this product is going to have global value? So then it was about about pricing.
Yes.
So it was about pricing, costing, understanding the difference between wholesale and retail, understanding what it takes in terms of the promo literature that has to go with it, tell the history of how the product was made, explain it to people. And then it was about, let's start moving from your little community to a larger community. So it was going from local to regional to national to international. What would it take to make those connections? And that's why I said it was product development, business development, and trade development. They had to understand everything about it.
There's so many complex issues about it. You're right. And scalability. Is what
Absolutely.
Their idea? I mean, scalability is such an issue. Can you make a lot of these if you get 5,000 orders next week? So
that's right. Yeah. What about the quality control?
Right, right.
Who's going to make sure that if you sell something, the beads aren't going to fall apart, or if you buy something that the stain that you used is going to last, that you won't get people sending it back or complaining? I mean, it was everything that had to be tested. And the only way we could do that, so I put together a very comprehensive model that is still used today, where I would actually bring in top merchandise specialists. When I mentioned the guy from IKEA, when I mentioned, like really big organizations that top buyers, I wanted them to be part of that beginning process.
I got it. I mean, it's really beginning with the end in mind. And a lot of times that is not what happens. You had this is where you want to go, and make it very clear and have it be your vision, and then give them the tools. And each one of these is critical, and I'm sure in large part why many businesses fail, because they don't have these components. And who, like for the business owners, I want to make sure this question comes out right as well, but for someone like IKEA, there's the grand part of I want to help businesses succeed, And was the other part an opportunity for the businesses being developed that IKEA might give them a nod? Because that's a dream to get something you designed to go in IKEA, or, you know, a product you want, like in the United States, to be put in Costco. You know, those are big, I made it.
Yes, in fact, that did happen many times over, and I can share this part. So when we were in Slovenia judging products, one of the judges that we had was Brent Beck, who was a general manager of Robert Redford's Sundance catalog and stores.
You're kidding.
And he saw some beautiful products. And so when we did the Uniquely Slovenia show in Los Angeles, in fact, that is the kind of thing that happens is, well, how can you develop this product? So it might be, I like this product, but can you change it a bit so that it fits our store? Yes. So that's part of those global connections. It's like the merchandise specialist not only wanted to help, but yeah, there is an ulterior motive. Like, they were getting first look at new innovative products.
Yes.
From someone who had not been exposed before.
And everybody wins. I mean, I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's a win-win-win. Yes, we want to do it. What was your first foray into places like Brunei and Indonesia and Chile? How did it go from the work you were doing in Canada? And then I'm like, okay, I'm watching this, reading your bio, and thinking, this is so big and so global and so of interest to me. What were some of the first things that happened that took you from, you know, working with people that you knew in a very, you know, a smaller setting to international global leader of women? Yes.
I honestly, that was not planned. In 1995, so I had been doing this from 1980s to 1995, I got a call from the director of CETA, who was in Singapore, a lovely lady by the name of Adair Hukan, and Nancy Spence, who became actually the British Commonwealth women's leader as well. And they had seen what I was doing, and they're both Canadians, but they had these international government jobs with CETA, which stands for the Canadian International Development Agency, which is no longer, it's now got a different name. But they contacted me and said, we have been following you, your magazine, and what you're doing with micro entrepreneurs, and we would like to know if you could come to Southeast Asia and present your model and adjudicate. And I'm like, really?
Love it.
So from 1997 to 2007, I would say, well, actually 95, but really got started in 1997 to 2007. Those 10 years is when I started going to all of the different, I was invited, it just was continual, like here, and it was just sharing this information so that it wasn't about me wanting to stay there. It was about, here are the tools we developed here, and then having me be shadowed by somebody in the country, right? So it's like about training the trainers, and that's the empowerment that you want to give. You want to be able to say, this is what we've done, this is the method, and you can continue with this and, you know, continue to help these women develop their products and grow.
And the magic begins, and the train the trainer. So it's, I love phrases that stick. So you were not giving them fish, you were teaching them how to fish. And that's such an understandable model for people.
In fact, that's what we're doing with Grow Your Biz now, right? It's about having wonderful managing directors and chairs. It's like, I will give you the tools, I will bridge that for you, but they're the secret sauce.
Yeah, I love that. Yes, I'm good. Yeah, it's another one I'm going to write down, the secret sauce.
And they are, right?
It is. It's so true.
It's leaders like you, Gina, like you're doing this wonderful podcast, bringing awareness to the importance of social justice and the green world and all of those things. So each one of us, as we get, as we kind of look back and say, what are our core vision and values? What can we share? And it is really about passing the torch, or yes, as Obama has said, passing the baton.
Yes, sharing our wisdom. And that's a great note. We have to take a very short break. This felt like about a minute and a half. So get ready for the next minute and a half, all of our listeners, to hear more about Barbara Mowat and some other really important things that she has contributed to, how she has a partner, and stay here with me because we will have lots more fun stuff to share. We'll be right back with Barbara Moet.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. The name of our show today is Shaping a World. And we think very carefully about the words that we are going to use to describe a show. And that's a really big vision that we wanted to paint for this one. So it's quite fitting that we're spending this hour with a very powerful woman who has been doing just that for most of her life, shaping and changing our world all for the betterment of humankind. She is committed to a healthy, sustainable, fair, and just world. And it is my pleasure to be spending this time with Barbara Moet, who is not just all of those things that I just mentioned. She is the president of Impact Communications and Grow Your Biz founder, which we are going to talk about. So, Barbara, thank you. And I want to ask you about, right before the break, when you did the international leap, are there certain tenets that are pretty much applicable to successful businesses? Or are there cultural differences that are obstacles or that at least have to be addressed when you're helping to use this model all around the world?
Yes, and I think this is where, one of the things that I found is that the challenges and the issues for all entrepreneurs everywhere in the world are often the same. It doesn't matter the size or, how much revenue you make. Sometimes
right.
I just say it's a zero at the end. And so the challenges are, they often, what a small business starts with, and you probably know this from yourself, is that sometimes we just feel isolated and lonely, and we don't know who to go to for help. So I always believe that it's not government or private alone. It is bringing both private organizations and public organizations together to take a look at what can be done to provide and encourage economic growth in an area. And I laugh because I remember a quote, and I hope I get this quote correctly, from Sir Richard Branson, who said, if you gave all the money that governments give that one government gives to another government in Africa, if you gave it to the woman, there would no longer be poverty. And so I laugh at that, but it's true. It's so true. So for me, it was always about, everybody needs to know what it takes to start a business and to grow a business. So it was always trying to say, okay, where are the difficulties? Is it capacity building? Is it financial? Is it expansion? Is it not knowing what to offer? And so it is the same, but you do have to be aware of cultural differences. And so when I was in Afghanistan or when I worked with the First Nations in Canada, for me it was always about, no, you can't just involve the women. You have to make sure that the family understands what's happening. Otherwise, often they can be sabotaged if they become successful. So for me, it's always looking at the family systems and making sure that everybody who is part of the woman's business that she's growing understands what it will mean. And that could even happen in North America. If a woman gets too big for her britches, kind of thing, what they say, they will, they could be resented, right?
Yes.
Because they're now taking away from family.
It's really sick, but it's true.
It's so true. So that's important for me with anyone I work with, is like, you know, how is your family involved? Do they understand what you're doing? And how can we include them? And that's got to be there.
That's like, that's, you know, I don't even know what to say. There's such hyperbole in my soul right now about, I can't over-exaggerate this. Barbara, I've been doing this for 9 years, and I don't think anyone I ever had on the show said, I look at family systems, because that's where women come from. It's the place from which we come. And I want to, you know, we're planning on taking clips out of, stellar clips out of interviews, and we'll catch this one because people will want to hear that clip and hear the rest of the show. And it's so very, very important than just looking at how is this product made and can you do it and how many can you make for me. So it's, I just have to do like a high five for that one. And you know, I have more issues about, I want to make sure that we have time to talk about Grow Your Biz for selfish and unselfish reasons, because it has been of such added value to my life in this new journey of Mrs. Green. I mean, I did something for 35 years and then all of a sudden, you know, I'm a podcaster. What the heck does that mean? So anyway, here's a question I want to ask though. As it grew, I always want to know this question. As things grew, as things began to unfold, how did you decide and how do you decide when and where and with whom you will work? I'm sure there are many demands and there are only so many hours in a day. So how did you start to kind of vet ideas or people, or what kind of process? That's a big one for me. When you grow like you have, how do you decide who gets the spotlight and this and the systems? Because it's a game changer.
So, you know, all of the initiatives that I have done over the years, I needed to get private organizations and government organizations involved.
Right.
And it always had to be what their core values are and what their interest is. And I know that since the very beginning, and I will do a plug here for BMO Bank of Montreal,
yes,
and BMO Harris Bank, is because they have a long history championing women entrepreneurs. In early 1990, I had the privilege of being asked by the Government of Canada that was looking at home-based business, SME, how do we break down the barriers, and it was a Minister of Finance and the Minister of Trade that I was representing micro-entrepreneurs, and on that committee was the president of Bank of Montreal, Tony Comper, at the time. And I had already started the Uniquely programs on the West, but we weren't in the East yet. And he saw the results and sort of said, like, what are you, you know, I don't know if I'm quoting him correctly, but it was sort of like, what are you doing? And I realized that we weren't in the East and we needed to develop that. So Bank of Montreal, from the very beginning, was part of our initiatives. In fact, he was the very first interview that I did when we took our little home-based business newsletter to a national magazine.
I love it. It's like Inside Edition.
And so he wanted to make sure that Uniquely Ontario was going to have 100% corporate sponsorship. And so what was interesting is that in British Columbia, I had 100% government sponsorship. In Alberta, we had half and half, government and private. And in Ontario, we had completely corporate. And I always looked at those three models. I had an opportunity to test them out. And I always said to people, which one do you think worked the best? And most often people will say, oh, the corporate one. And actually, no, it's public-private because you need both. And so, and Bank of Montreal understood that, and they were not trying to, say, oh, just go corporate. They were open to that public-private working together. And since then, so I've been with Bank of Montreal for like over 30 years now. And every time I always proved myself that it's always about the relationships. And I do want to mention this too, because it isn't all banks, usually all financial institutions have similar products, have similar services, have similar blah, 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 right?
Right, right.
But what they don't have, what it's about is there has to be a culture where they understand the importance of relationships. And so I would bring them in to these small to introduce them to these very small businesses at their infancy stage of development. So it wasn't about, oh, you have to bank with me immediately. It's about building a relationship over the years. And then as they grow, they start understanding, oh, you were there for me. And so that's that, you know, that means a lot to me. That means so much to me, because I don't want short-term relationships with the people that I chose to work with, nor do I want short-term relationships with, or nor do the, my small businesses want short. They want to know that you're there for the long term. And so, you know, since then, the Bank of Montreal clearly, and I guess I should also mention, in 1993, Bank of Montreal was one of the first organizations that came that supported the Canadian Woman Entrepreneur of the Year Award in various categories. And it started in 92, and in 1992, I was a runner-up for impact on the economy, and in 1993, I won, and it was the Bank of Montreal that presented that award. So that, those things are important. It's like they want to see women entrepreneurs grow, because they see the positive economic outlook that it does for a country, that it does for a community. So, you know, when you ask me how did I choose, I was very careful to take a look at who are champions in this area, who are acting with a generosity of spirit, who wants to really collaborate, and that to me is important. So, you know, I choose people. I choose my chairs for Grow Your Biz, my managing directors for Grow Your Biz, on that basis. It's not just about the skills they have. It's about what's inside them.
And to just bring that up about growing your relationship, I mentioned to you that I just returned from a 6-day intensive retreat called Cultivating Women's Leadership, and part of the mission and vision for the founders of that organization were to help strengthen women's voices, because we do bring a different set of skills and insights and values to the table that don't diminish what's already at the table, but enhance it. And when you talk about BMO having a culture of understanding the importance of relationships, that's almost the nexus of what the difference is. I mean, they have been very helpful and supportive, and in growing the first one that started here in Phoenix, and I am a product of that incredible investment. So let's talk about a little bit more before we go into Grow Your Biz, which I really want to, because I would love listeners around the country and around the world to Google it, to go to the website and find out about it. How do you address, or did you have to address, and this is not to put you on the spot, but there are social justice issues around things like fair trade, which is grossly overused, and if something isn't labeled fair trade, it doesn't mean that it isn't. You know what I mean? It's such a it's an authentication process that's very hard for some businesses. So how did you, in countries outside of the United States and Canada, were those some of the things you looked at, fair trade and acceptable working conditions? Or was
Absolutely, we did. And I'll give a plug in for a wonderful woman by the name of Anu Agarwal, who is in is from India, Delhi, but now lives in Dallas, Texas, and she has a company called Living Dreams and Chetna, lots of community oriented, not-for-profit organizations where she really helps. And she was the one that really taught me a lot about what does fair trade mean and how do we help these people. So one of the things that, she was one of my merchandise specialists who came with me to Afghanistan, Uganda, and all the wonderful, you know, Bhutan, etc., Bangladesh. And it is her spirit and her vision that taught me a lot in this area. And one of the things that she would say is that, you know, when and she supplies large organizations, whether it's Saks or Nordstrom and Pier 1, etc. And when they would, when she was forced with, I have to make sure that my people that are producing these products have a living wage and are being treated properly. So some of the things that she did in India is that she would make sure that the mothers who were working with her, the women who were working with her who are mothers, that their children had a chance to have, if the kids had to come with them, that because they were younger, they would have an opportunity to have food, that they would get travel, just different things like that, that meant so much to me. So when we were working with producers, we wanted to see where they were producing from.
Right.
And that was important. And then the other part to that is if all of a sudden the buyer that she was selling to had to increase the price. So often that intermediary, they'll go back to the producer and say, I'm sorry, this is not a new, I'll tell you what she did. So they would say, well, we have to pay you less.
Right.
She would never do that. What she would do is say, okay, if they're asking for, and I'm just using this figure, 10 cents more, she would say, let me take a look at the whole supply chain. Maybe I take a penny from you, a penny from the distributor, a penny from the shipping company, a penny from... In other words, her goal was always, how do we take that increase that I'm being demanded by the buyer to make sure that it's equally distributed by the whole supply chain? Isn't that brilliant?
It's brilliant, and that was way back. I mean, it's, now it's so much more in the forefront. So to me, hearing this that was happening back in the 90s, it's like, I every once in a while, I like to ring the bell when I'm on the air. I learned that when I was on Clear Channel. So it's like, yeah, that's a bell ringer. It's just, there's something you have to do to celebrate the enormity of what you just shared. I mean, it's so impactful to me and floats my boat.
And you know what the other thing was that I recommended, and we talked about this back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and some people are kind of catching on. I said, wouldn't it be great if every big store, if we could see a product, so if I went into Pier 1 as an example, I don't know why I'm picking on them, I'm not really, but if I went into a big store and I saw a product, wouldn't it be great to be able to put on a video really quick and say, where is this being made?
Yes.
And let's follow the supply chain.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Right?
Yes, that would be awesome.
And then as buyers, we would know, do we really want to buy this product? How that would change, because everybody says the bottom line for a person who has very little income is they buy the most inexpensive products because they're just looking for price, and that's it, right? That's
right.
Their bottom line.
Right.
But if we were educated differently, how that would change the whole value of
the supply. And, I think that is also a myth. I think that if we help, it's kind of playing to the lower end of our consciousness or whatever you want to call it without judgment, because I think, like, I have had people in my life that got laid off and that didn't have enough money for lots of things, but they made commitments to things like, no matter what, I'm going to feed my children organic vegetables, for example.
Yeah.
So they made other sacrifices. So if people know and we help educate them, we don't know what their choice is going to be. And it matters to me, because we cannot assume that they want the cheapest choice. They might want the lasting choice and be able to help someone with a step up. And, you know, I reflect back on this, you know, the value and the importance of women's leadership and people like you having a voice to take a much more comprehensive look and how everybody wins when that happens. And we have about like a minute left to the next break, which is like, I'm out of breath because it's like, oh my gosh, we have to go on for another half hour just about Grow Your Biz. But when we come back, I would like to hone in on that, because I think there are hundreds of thousands of female business owners and entrepreneurs that are really needing the support. It's a different kind of support. It goes wide and deep. It is about building relationships. So when we come back, we should try to, I mean, I'm a whirling dervish from birth, but really hone in on how you started that and you are the founder, and make some comments on what your vision was and how that has played out so very successfully. So does that sound like a good, you know, close for the show. I want to know if there's anything else on the show. You know, it's very conversational. If there are other things in terms of the first part of, and the things we've covered that you'd like to share. And you can think about that on the break, Barbara Mowat.
Thank you.
And the other thing is, I want to mention before we take the break, is so typical of your giving and open heart. When we talked off air an hour ago, you said, oh, I have so many other people or several other people that I would love for you to have on your show. And that to me is just another example of your, you know, casting a really wide net so that other people can have their time in the spotlight or have the time with Mrs. Green. So everybody stay here with me. We'll be right back with Barbara Mowat.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And I want to correct what I just said, because we're not a radio network anymore. We are a podcast series, and I said that for so many years, but the power of the podcast is all part of my journey. It lives forever on my website. You can hear me on iHeartRadio. And I hope that some of you will be inspired to go to my website and become a sustaining member. We are the Green NPR. We are here to bring you messages like this, like Barbara, from all over the country. So consider becoming a sustaining member. You name the amount. You know, we're hoping to get 1,000 women to contribute $8.34 a month. So be inspired and consider support of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. So Barbara, again, thank you so much for being with us. If you just joined us, Barbara Mowat is the president of Impact Communications and Grow Your Biz founder. And we are going to talk now about Grow Your Biz, unless you thought of something you have to share, Barbara, about the first segments.
No, but I'm so happy that you're going to be open to some of these other amazing global women that I believe should be on a podcast, because I will call them kindred spirits to us.
I can't wait. And obviously, from my enthusiasm, I love showcasing really successful and women that are committed to the values that I share of relationship and raising everybody's bottom, because then we all win. So bring it on. Game on. We're going to hear from friends of Barbara Mowat, and I can't wait. So let's talk about Grow Your Biz. What is it, and how did what you did in the beginning years morph into filling such an important need for women business owners?
Thank you. You know, I mentioned our first three companies, the Uniquely, the magazine, etc. I did not know the value of an advisory board back then, and it was it is interesting, because when I looked back at my first companies, I basically gave them away, Gina. I basically gave them away. It was because I was doing everything myself, and that's often the case with businesses, right?
Yes.
We are a one-man band. We think that we personally can do everything, every detail. We micromanage the business. We feel, you know, we got to do it all. I was totally naive, and I felt the consequences of that, because I literally did not bring the value up of those businesses. And then I got exposed by becoming a chair of other organizations where they had, I mean, advisory boards and boards of directors are out there. And so I led those for 7 years, and I worked with very, very large companies. And I would have women that would call me and say, I love what you're doing, and I want to be a member of an advice. I would like to be a member of that board. But in fact, there was revenue attached to those big, large boards, right?
Right.
This is an example in the States, right? But the cost is like $16,000 a year. So what I realized is that advisory boards are for any size of business. It doesn't matter. It's only a zero at the end. Every one of us feels like we're alone and we're isolated. And so at that, and that was in October 2010, or actually it was actually June 2010 when I went, you know what? Everything I've done in the world for micro entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs, how can I formalize that so that I can provide a peer-to-peer business advisory board for smaller businesses and for any size of business? And not necessarily the person that's coming out of high school,
right,
but that could
right.
even. But so for me, and it was just it was this synchronicity kind of thing. So I had a senior VP from Bank of Montreal who said, "You need to meet Barbara Mowat," and then the person from the bank was, and then I was being told, "I need to meet Joanne Gassman from Bank of Montreal." So it was like, okay, we've been told this back and forth. So that was my very first meeting I had where I presented the idea, and obviously they understood what I was trying to do. I had a history of success with them. They knew that I was here for the long term, and they knew that I had a passion for helping women entrepreneurs. So one of the things that I was asking for initially was, you know, a one-year sponsorship. And one of the things that they said is, like, this is important to us, and so we want to become a founding and developing partner.
Amazing.
I knew that I was on something.
Oh, yes.
I knew I was on something. So the whole idea of Grow Your Biz started in 2010. We now have over 25 boards across Canada. We have licensing agreements, and we are now in Florida, Arizona, Washington State, and soon to be in Illinois. And in September 19th, we launch in London, UK.
Yes. And I love it. Do you need any help to go over there and help launch? I'm signing myself up.
Okay, Gina. And so, really what it is bringing together women every month for three to four hours, but usually it's a three-hour meeting, where it's about peers learning from each other. The chair, we have a professional chair who understands and who understands entrepreneurship, because every one of our chairs has had their own business. They know what it's like,
yes,
to be able to have the opportunity to share their business challenges, to take a look at different strategies they might be thinking, and to have candid remarks back from the other people around the table that could actually either validate their strategies or share what they have gone through with a similar experience. So that is what we do every month for these entrepreneurs. And we know, and I'll share this, we have a bank up here that's called BDC, Business uh-huh. Development Bank, and they did a study in 2014 which clearly showed the value of a advisory board. They said that 86% of their respondents said they benefited from the advice of their advisory board and believed that it had a significant impact on their company, because it helps companies deal with their vision, risk management, their profitability, their sales growth, things that come up that might come up with labor relations, hiring the best employee, keeping them, retaining them. So what peers learn from each other is extremely valuable, not to take away from going to conferences or seminars, but it's every month keeping people on track and making sure they're accountable. So, you know, in a nutshell, what we cover every month is we have every member of a board, because it is your informal board of directors.
Right.
We have them share their business growth, their business operations, their business leadership, and then we also take a look at personal health and well-being and what how they're balancing that, because we know that people not only have a business life, they have a personal life, they have a life. So your health, things that are happening in your in your personal life very much can impact your business. So when you have a when you put together a confidential setting where peers can share those experiences, and it's not only about what their successes are and what's going right, what I'm more interested in is what is their business challenge that they are facing in the next 30 days?
Yes.
Then the next part is making sure that they set an accountability every month. So it is up to the members and the chair to make sure that those challenges are kept on track. And if you keep on coming up with the same accountability, well, I didn't do that, then you are challenged.
Yes.
You're challenged by your peers. You're challenged by the chair to say, you know, Sandra, you've been saying that now 3 months. Let's really do a deep dive and take a look at what's the holdup. What's triggering your thinking process that you're not being able to move into it? That is so powerful, Gina.
And don't I know it? I mean, having sitting in one of those chairs, and just I don't want to interrupt the flow because it's reminding me why when you first came to Arizona, I was the first one to jump up, and my Grow Your Biz advisory group still teases me about it. I just sat there and I thought, and I know what I know, and I followed my head and my heart, and I jumped up, and I was the first one to say I am in, because I was looking for a place, a professional, nurturing, supportive, and yet highly holding me accountable place to share my pain, my sorrows, my accomplishments, all of that. It's not a kumbaya group, even though we have formed deep friendships. But they do
There is a camaraderie, but that's again,
yes,
what makes it successful is because,
yes,
every one of us in that board meeting, we want for you to be successful because,
yes,
we're your board.
Yes.
Right? We want to make sure. And what happens is, and again, going back to that BDC study, they will show that sales growth was much stronger when you had an advisory board. And it was something like sales grew in their study, and this was across Canada, of course, but it grew 66.8% compared to 22.9% without a board.
That's so powerful. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So when you take a look at preventing people from making mistakes, so it's company survival, and not only that, I think it brings rigor to the company, and you can also feel like a Fortune 500 company. Yes, I have an advisory board. My board says blah, blah, blah. And the impact is absolutely significant. And I think that covers everything from, you know, what are some of those major decisions that a person faces? We know what they are. It's about things like financial management. It's about growth. It's about making decisions about equipment purchasing, people hiring, investments. You know, it demonstrates that you can ask your board anything. They will help you.
Yes. Yes. And we have to say, I mean, so I think that the first one was in Arizona, in Phoenix, with Isabel Banerjee. We have to give a shout out to Isabel for stepping into it. And my Grow Your Biz girlfriends. I mean, it's not a leads group, and it's not a networking group. It really is a board. And that's what psyched me out when I came to hear you. How do you talk about your financials and your cash flow and what kind of loan to get, things that you don't do when you're in a networking group at a breakfast for an hour and a half. I mean, it's a serious commitment to successful female entrepreneurship, and I have not been disappointed. It's been amazing. And I go up to Phoenix to participate and have formed amazing relationships and supportive businesses to help Mrs. Green's world grow.
Thank you, and I do want to give a shout out for Isabel. So, Isabel is the kind of quality of a managing director and chair that Grow Your Biz desires,
yes,
and values. She is a woman who grew her own successful multi-million-dollar company. She knows what it's like to have to deal with those everyday things that a business owner has to deal with.
Yes, that can make or break you.
Right. That is exactly right. So having an advisory board allows business leaders to actually question themselves and forces them to reflect, right?
Yes.
Because we got to know how can we be the leader that we want to be, but yet not feel that we're alone, and that's where that peer-to-peer comes in. And it is a camaraderie, and it takes, I'll go back to, Isabel is a secret sauce, and then all of you together,
yes,
you champion each other.
Yes.
And so that lasts, and people will always say, well, does it last forever? I've had groups that have gone on for 7-8 years, and they're still together. There might be some that have to move on because they've moved out of a city, but they stay together because it's like, well, do my business challenges ever end? No, actually,
no,
they don't.
They don't. They grow and they change. And we have had some amazing, really powerful sessions that helped all of us in different ways. And, you know, we have about 4 minutes left, and I want to give everybody your how to find out more about Grow Your Biz. And it's very simple. It's GRO without a W, growyourbiz.com. There's a Facebook page, Grow Your Biz. Twitter, GROW, GR without the W, Grow Your Biz, so people can do that. And before we go, I want to talk a little bit about the conference that you have coming up in, isn't it in May?
Accelerate, yes, thank
2017.
You. I was going to say that.
Yes, because
We did an inaugural conference in 2015 with accolades from all over the world. We will continue May 3rd to 5th. 2017, beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia.
I can't wait.
We will continue. We will continue to innovate, inspire, and influence women business owners and all business owners to focus on new ways of thinking beyond the norm. And that's that thought leadership, right? We want to look at leadership development. We want to look at global competitiveness, business growth through innovation and commercialization, and mega trends and issues and solutions like you bring to the podcast, Gina, every time you do one of these. So I thank you. It's a big shout out, and it's Grow Your Business Conference, and we have, I don't know if you saw our last shout out, but we've got speakers now from Tunisia, from Paris, from the UK. We've got exceptional people coming from all over the world, and I'm so thrilled to invite the world back. And we are going
too. I'm so excited, and it's not just for Grow Your Biz. It's
no.
for all business women, because I have other groups like this Cultivating Women's Leadership group. Quite a few of those women will be very interested in something like that. So I'll put the information out through the Mrs. Green's World Network, because I assume it's going to be different from other conferences. I just know because of Grow Your Biz Peer Advisory, it's different, and I plan to
be
there.
It is different. It's going to be practical, provocative, and thought leaders who have global and like-minded entrepreneurs, but it's also open to men. We want,
yes,
honestly,
yes.
We have to make sure, again, back to family systems, we have to make sure that our voices are heard among all of us.
Yes, yes, it's so not exclusive. I mean, it, to me, it's really, really important that we...
Thank you so much for giving me a plug. Give me a plug for that, because we are so looking forward to Accelerate 2017. We have Elise Nelson from Vital Voices coming, you know, CEO of Vital Voices Global Partnership. We have Amanda Ellis, who is with the East-West Center, senior fellow who was the prior ambassador for the United Nations for New Zealand. We've got unbelievable speakers coming.
And tell me a quick shout out, and if you don't have it at the tip of your tongue, where they can get information, listeners, and I will put it out, like I said, in my
it's Accelerate, spelled Accelerate 2017.com.
I put it in my Google search and it came up right away, and I will get that out to my group. Barbara, and I apologize for saying it, maybe the American version of, I'm saying Moat, and it's Moat. I heard you say that I have hopefully made your time with us worthwhile by just hearing the incredible vision And not just the vision, but the execution of that vision ongoing. We have all benefited from it. So thank you for taking the time and for caring enough to be on Mrs. Green's World. Next week, are you ready for this? Marius Smith, founder of Plastic Whale. There's never a dull moment in Mrs. Green's World. Barbara, thanks, and I can't wait to see you in May.
Thank you, Gina. Okay. Bye.
Take care.